This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. In an industry that has for years had people endlessly blabbering away about how content is king, my God, that's clever. It's amazing to me how I can count the number of pure-play digital signage creative shops on one hand. Microgigantic is one of those rare shops, a Minneapolis, Minnesota-based boutique agency that does visual storytelling for brands, whether that's retail or corporate. The company's roots are with one of the biggest brands in the Twin Cities, the mass merchandising retailer Target. Mark Bennett managed the media production group at Target, and a big part of that was feeding the many screens sprinkled around the huge stores. It was a great gig, Bennett says, but he got the 7-year itch to go out on his own and started Microgigantic knowing there wasn't a lot of competition for what he wanted to do. His team does retail, but the real growth these days is for work in areas like corporate, with companies looking to make visual statements about what they do and what they're about. Mark, thank you for taking the time. Best way to get into this is let's talk about what Microgigantic is.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, so Microgigantic is something my business partners and I started about 6 years ago after spending about 7 years at Target running their media production teams. And at the core of it, Microgigantic helps brands tell stories. We develop content strategy, we produce creative content, and we design and implement experiences using digital signage. So it's an interesting mix. And when people ask me about what you do, I say, well, half the business is focused on content and the other half is focused on digital signage experiences. And they say, what? What's that?
Right? And I might as well just ask about the name. Where did that come from?
Yeah, everybody almost always asks about the name. And I don't know, I don't think it's a super interesting story. My business partner...
Well, then make it quick.
Yeah, my business partner had, when things were blowing up with a web, he bought, I don't know how many URLs, 30, 40, 50 URLs. And this was on a list of all these URLs. And I looked down at it and I saw Microgigantic. I think he also had Tiny Big and Tiny Huge. And I was like, that's it, Microgigantic. And he's like, okay. Done. I mean, it literally took like five. It was like 10 seconds and we figured it out. So it must have been the right thing to do.
And you mentioned you spent a lot of years with Target with the video production team. Was it the video production team that ran the whole Target Digital Signage Network?
It was. Yep. I was hired, actually, my first job at Target was to take their outsourced digital signage network and bring it in-house. We called that Channel Red was our sort of the internal name for it. And it was being outsourced at the time. And, you know, they did it via DVD and VHS tape, if that dates me a little bit. But we brought it in and did an RFI, an RFP process. And I ran all of the production side. So 1,800 stores, 50,000 screens. And we learned a few things about doing digital signage at scale at retail.
I bet. Yeah, I wanted to kind of dig into that a little bit because it's probably, as you say, there's a lot of learnings there. I've been involved in digital signage for better part of 20 years and seen a lot of changes and seen a lot of things that happened, like the idea that big mass merch stores were just going to be, I don't want to say carpeted, but there would be one hell of a lot of screens all through those stores. And I think I certainly saw attempts at that, but for the most part, that hasn't really played out that way. And I wonder if you guys learned that screens everywhere in a big footprint store isn't necessarily the answer doesn't necessarily work, or maybe it did and it just, I just missed it.
No, I think you're right. I think that what we learned, or what I learned over the time at Target, was that, you know, we certainly did a lot of testing of all sorts of different sizes and shapes and formats of screens and channels. And I think what digital signage does really well is it focuses the message on a particular area, in this case, on a particular area in a big box store. So the stuff that was really successful was successful because it was focused on a specific area. So I know they have screens in the pharmacy area, and it's specifically focused on entertainment and education with the goal of being perceived wait time reduction, right? There are screens at the sort of music and movie section where they're selling all the TVs, and that totally makes sense. And those are sold like a network. And there were screens that we did tests in the beauty area. If you go into a Target store now, you'll see screens, and some of them at the very front area. But I think those are more about atmospheric and sort of setting a brand tone. So I think overall, I think the thing that we learned was that you really needed to have a specific goal and then focus on that area. I remember Michael Francis, one of the CMO that was there when we were there, said, you know, why are we running Target broadcast spots on the music and movies channel when the customer's already in the store? And it was sort of an epiphany to us running the network, because it didn't make a ton of sense. They're already in the store. And maybe we should have been focused a little bit more on promotional production. And so it was, I know at that point, that was something that we made a big shift. And we weren't, it was sort of that learnings very early on in the sort of mid 2000s, where, you know, people were still running broadcast spots in retail, and you could see the talking heads, but not hear anything. And so we learned that very early on, that we needed to make content specifically for in-store, and that all the vendors that came to us said that they wanted to run their broadcast spots, we highly encouraged them to go back to their agencies and create some spots specifically for indoor, because those broadcast pieces just typically don't work.
Did you see an evolution of that? If you were there for several years, when you started, I'm sure everybody just wanted to shovel their other media material onto that, those screens. But, you know, 6-7 years later, did you get a sense the brands were starting to get it?
Yeah, totally were starting to get it. And I think they realized that this was a viable channel to get their message out. There were audiences that were, you know, looking at the screen, and dwell times, especially in that music and movies area, were decent. And I think they were right around 15 minutes at that point. And vendors, I would say early on in Channel Red, vendors would come to us and say, yeah, we want to be on the network and we'd like to sign up for a certain amount of time. And we'd also like you to make our spot. Mm. And we were like, what? They were like, yeah, you guys get it. You get digital signage. You get digital signage inside of Target. Can you make our spot? And we're like, but we don't know anything about Sony, like, or whoever it was, right? And it was a very interesting time. But of course, the creatives loved it, because here's another brand that they get to create content for. And yeah, they were pretty digital signage savvy. So absolutely, things changed pretty dramatically in the 7 years that I was there.
So to a lot of people involved in digital signage ops, they would think that was a killer job. But, you know, man, yeah, that's a big network, a big brand, everything else. They've invested in it. What prompted you to leave?
It's a great question. Yeah, it was an absolutely killer job. One of the best jobs I've ever had, except for the one that I have now. I had said to my executives that I reported up to that I was going to be good for about 7 years, and then I was going to get the itch. And every time I'd go through a review cycle, I'd say, all right, I got 2 years left. And I got 1 year left. I got 6 months left. And certainly when it came down to letting them know that I was leaving to start my own thing, they were completely shocked, of course. But yeah, it was a great job. And, you know, we got to do all sorts of amazing work, and the opportunities were pretty remarkable. But it was, you know, it was time for somebody else to do that. And I wanted to go off and do something new. And, you know, it was my time to go.
So when you had brands coming to you and saying, we'd like you to build the spot, was that part of the impetus? You realized, oh, there's a business here.
I think that was pretty early on in running the network, and I was having way too much fun and way too busy to even think about it. I mean, it could have been a seed, but I didn't recognize it at the time. We were just, you know, we did about 700 interactive and video pieces out of that group on a yearly basis. So it was, we talked about target time, you know, we were busy. We were very busy, and we didn't have a huge team, but they were going all the time. So you didn't have much time to think.
Right. So when you decided to do what became MicroGigantic, did you have to think, okay, now what am I doing? Or was it pretty clear that you were going to go or like continue what you'd learned in digital signage, doing your own thing?
Yeah, it was pretty clear. I tell people I started thinking about it with one of my business partners about 2 years out. We started making a plan for it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was pretty clear to me. I mean, we got very lucky. I was very lucky at Target to be able to do all the different things I did there. And you are absolutely correct. It felt like I could take the knowledge that I gained there and be able to go out and help other vendors do or other clients do similar things. And you know, digital signage was just year after year growing and growing and growing. And the knowledge that we had after running that network for so many years, I think serves us well to this day about how to set these things up and what to think about on the front end, which most clients don't have a clue about. So
I continue to be stumped, and I'm sure it's a happy thing for you that there are so few agencies, boutique shops, whatever you want to call them, that are focused on digital signage creative. Like I get asked, well, who should we talk to? And it's like a really short list, and I don't get it when everybody's running around saying content is king.
Yeah. I mean, they've been saying that for how long, right? And
yeah.
Yet that was certainly one of the reasons why, you know, we surveyed the marketplace and we were like, hey, nobody is focusing on content for digital signage. And I think we can make a go of it. Yeah. It's shocking to me. This is whatever, 13 years later since I started at Target, people are still saying content is king.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's taking different forms. But it is shocking.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So when you got into this, you started your own shop. Was the primary goal to just do creative, or did you realize that you kind of have to be a solutions provider, that you're not only going to, you know, make the pretty motion graphics and shoot the great video, you're going to have people who will stand in a dusty room and yell at electricians to, you know, get their butts over there and put a fuse box in place or whatever. Not a fuse box, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm old.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I say this a lot, is that, you know, I lead with Target every day. Target gets us in the door for most of our client biz.
It's your six-letter word.
Yeah, exactly. And And it's given us the opportunity between Target and the content side of the business, that opens up all the doors. And sort of once we get in and they realize that clients realize that we can help them with digital signage, or that digital signage is actually a thing, that it's great. I mean, they don't know what they don't know. And so on a lot of these corporate projects that we're working on, they would flounder through it. They're really smart people, and they would, you know, marketing teams will work with IT teams and they'll figure it out. But it's been so much more helpful to have somebody like us who can come in and have knowledge around what does it take to, how many full-time employees do you need to run a network? And what are the job descriptions look like? And what if I don't want to do this at all internally? And how can I do this using an external resource? And, you know, all the stuff that you just know after so many years in the business.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part, they just have no grasp of that, right?
They don't. And many times what we see is these are mostly IT-led projects, and nothing against IT. They line up and check all the boxes about the right software and the right hardware. But at the end of the day, if this is about storytelling, and it's about storytelling across multiple channels, and you've got to take marketing and communications teams as the right partners. And that's where we really come in as consultants and help those marketing communications teams understand the technology side of the project, but also we can speak brand storytelling, and that's the stuff that they really love. And it, you know, it's a win-win.
Yeah, I suppose if you have an IT-led project, that first meeting, I assume you're telling them, you know what, we need to get some other people in the room here.
Yeah, we really do. And it's, you know, I think one of the things that we started off thinking when we started MicroGigantic was that we were going to have some, we were going to build up a technical staff here in-house to be able to pull these projects off. And it took a couple of years for us to figure out that, you know, our sweet spot is really in the navigating between IT and marketing and communications, and being able to interpret for each of those groups and tell great stories about why this particular software works really well and why IT needs to think about this sort of messaging. And so maybe 2 years in, we did a pretty big pivot and went to partnering with AV vendors pretty exclusively to do all the sort of solution design work, so that we could really focus on the creative and the experience work.
Yeah, because you're never going to be able to handle the kind of scale that some job might come up with. And if you have those partners, they can say, yeah, we can do that.
Yep, exactly.
So let's talk about a specific project. You kindly emailed me a video of a project that I gather by the date of the video just lit up fairly recently at University of Minnesota. What was all that about?
Yeah, that was a project we finished just this summer, actually. It was a long one for us, and it was a big one for us. The University of Minnesota's Alumni Center contacted us after doing some initial research, and I think even they got some bids from some other vendors out of town. And what they wanted to do was create a collaboration space up on the second floor of the Alumni Center. And it was a place where the university could tell these super high impact stories to very sort of high profile audiences. They have on the second floor is the Alumni Association, it's the foundation, it's the Office of Economic Development, which they call the front door of the university. There's a group called the Office of Technology Commercialization, which is an incredibly cool group that spins off startups based on university research and findings and processes. They also license university technology out of that group. So from a storytelling perspective, that group alone was an amazing group to work with. But the idea was that they wanted to create this space where they could tell these high impact stories and emphasize sort of this university-wide theme that the University of Minnesota has called Driven to Discover. So we got brought in and were asked to create this space along with an architect firm to create this space where they could tell these great stories. And so it was pretty much an open book. They wanted the space to feel very high end and very much unlike anything else in the university. So we got to concept all sorts of different experiences, from, you know, little huddle spaces to a big curved theater where a group of executives could come in and give a presentation to another group of executives and feel like it was a very special place. So it was really, really a fun project.
Hmm. And you've done another video I looked at was Lifetime Fitness, and that was very much digital signage kind of project. Was that just at, I think Lifetime's based in this Minneapolis area, isn't it?
They are. Yep.
That was their flagship?
It was interesting. They came to us and they said, we want to, moving forward with all of our clubs going forward, we want to get rid of paper. Mm. And so we think using digital signage is the way to do that. So we were on this project exclusively to do something we call content strategy, which is helping Lifetime figure out what's the best way to tell their story in the club, whether or not that's, you know, talking about the pools closed for a certain time or telling the story about all of their studios and what's happening in their studios to what the trainers are doing and bios of the trainers and so on. So we worked with a group of about 35 Lifetime employees and did a content strategy on the front end that really did. It identified zones. It identified the guests. We concepted screen types. We worked with them to identify, to create UI and UX for some interactive screens. On down the list, it was actually relatively quick, three month project. And then at the end of it, to be able to sell the executives on this project, we created basically an executive summary video. You may have seen that one on the website. And it told the story of how exciting it could be to have digital screens everywhere in Lifetime. So it was really fun.
And did they go forward with it?
They did. They went forward with it. And, you know, like any good project, you know, the big picture concepting in many cases doesn't see a full fruition when it comes to budgets and reality, but they are moving forward. And I believe many of the Lifetimes moving forward will have screens that were concepted as a part of this project.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's always tough when you get down to the franchise level to get them to spend the money on things that they don't necessarily, you know, wasn't their idea and they didn't buy into out of the gate.
This is true. Yep. This is true. It's a hard pill to swallow for those franchisees to see the value in spending the money on screens and infrastructure. And then, you know, in the cases where they have to run it to mm-hmm. account. Yeah.
A lot of what I've seen in your videos is originally shot footage. So you're using people, you're using scenes, you're using landscapes and all that sort of thing, as opposed to just, you know, nimble, snappy motion graphics. In your experience over the years, have you found that you have to have that mix, that you can't just rely on Adobe After Effects to tell your story? You need people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the content side of the business, you know, we've got folks from agency backgrounds and brand backgrounds, but we also have our overall creative director comes from an indie feature background. And so at the core of what they do, they are storytellers. And in the concepting phase of any project, you may get concepts that are live action that are animation or that are a mix of both. Mm-hmm. And it's really sort of the core of what we do is visual storytelling. So if it's live action, then that's the way that the client goes, that's great. But it could also be equally done with some sort of watercolor animation or a mixture of both live action and animation together. And it's, you know, we're trying to disrupt the content that we build. We are trying to get people to look at it, whether or not it's on a digital signage network or it's on your mobile device or on your computer. And, you know, you use all the tools that you can to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine you mentioned tools. It's a lot easier now than it was certainly 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, to shoot live action because, geez, you can do it on a smartphone and it's going to look pretty good. Or you can get, you know, a Blackmagic design camera for $1,000 that's it'll shoot, you know, spectacular 4K?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, you get that from clients all the time is like, well, why should we hire you guys when I can get my marketing coordinator to go shoot iPhone video? And I said, you guys should, if that's what you think, then you should go do that. And that falls back when things don't come out very well. There's lots of tools, right, that are inexpensive to use. Yeah. The challenge is that, you know, when you work with us, we've got professional technicians who've been doing this for a long time. iPhone video is absolutely fantastic for some projects.
Yeah.
And try using the audio.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think clients realize that when you do shoot iPhone video and you have to use the audio, you might as well just throw it away.
Yeah.
And how important audio is to messaging in many cases. If you don't need audio, great. And then iPhone video works awesome. But it's a mistake that we've seen folks make a lot. And that even last week, we got a project. Mark, can you come and help us? We've got all this video that was shot with an iPhone, but the audio is absolutely unusable. Yep, that's what happened.
Yeah, well, I've got a whole bunch of wrenches, but I don't do my own plumbing.
Exactly.
That would be a disaster. You did another one, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was a mix of what you were describing where you had live action, you green screened some actors, and then blended in this amazing set of visuals that were somewhat dynamic. I forget what
yeah.
It was for a video wall in a lobby, I believe.
Yep. It was a video wall. It was for one of our clients called Prime Therapeutics. And
right.
They were doing a remodel of their executive lobby. And so the ask was, you know, when they get guests, they're not going to stay for very long, but they wanted to create an art piece that had some really, really light touch branding on it. And at the time, they were going through a brand remodel. And so their brand remodel was really focused on this idea of roots. And so the concept that we came up with was that we were going to use some live action dancers shot on green screen. And then this sort of seasons concept where we took animated sort of watercolor seasons of fall, winter, spring, and summer and applied them on top of each other. And so we created about an 8-minute loop, 2 minutes for each season. So as the seasons change, you run 2 minutes in the spring, 2 minutes in the summer, on down the list. Yeah, that was a really, really, really beautiful project. The animation on that one is quite striking.
Do you find when you do that sort of thing that you can show that to other clients and they say, yeah, I want that. Not that exactly, but kind of like that.
Yeah. You know, we did a project, it was for an event, and we did a project that was very similar to that, where it was this client of ours called Greater MSP was a was looking to what the future of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area was like. So they talked to all these sort of prominent people in the area and said, you know, what's the future hold for this area of the country? And so they, together, we picked these four or five speakers. We just shot live action of them talking about how they saw the future of the water in this area and the future of technology and on down the list. And as they were speaking, this was the probably one of the first or second events at US Bank Stadium. So as they were speaking, up on this massive screen over one end of the stadium, on the other end of the stadium was this amazing watercolor animation that helped tell the story of what they were talking about. So you get one, two, three or four speakers, and the event was held on the floor of the stadium. So you have these people and they don't know where to look. Like, they want to look at the people talking, but then there's this beautiful art that is being created as they speak. So it was certainly inspired by some of the Prime stuff that we did earlier.
Do you find that there's more and more growth in the area of some sort of an experiential, welcoming branding piece like that in corporate lobbies, that companies want to make a statement as people walk through their doors?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say the growth in that area for us has been pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to make a statement. And I think it's really, I just read somewhere, it was probably on your page, that there was an architect that talked about how they have had to change the way they look at corporate lobbies because of millennials, because millennials are expecting to have some sort of digital experience when they walk into these lobbies, that their architects are needing to think much differently about, you know, instead of having glass and granite and reception areas, reception desks, they are now looking at, how do I do nanolumens video wall, or how do I do some sort of projection or clear LED or some sort of, you know, fantastical experience, brand experience when I walk into a lobby.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice that the technology is catching up, that those things become feasible and they actually look good.
They do. Yeah, they really do. You know, you got to, you know, just like any project, you got to make sure you cross your I's and dot your T's when it comes to the technology. But yeah, it's, you know, it's gone out of vaporware, and, you know, we're actually installing some pretty cool technology these days that, you know, I really like the way the LED mesh stuff is being used in architecture, and it's pretty fun to be in the business right now.
Yeah, there's some stuff coming down the pike too, that hardened LED panels that you can actually do things with and touch, and they can be sprayed with water and stuff, and they're not going to die on you. They're not going to be damaged.
Right. And that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. You start to get into that sort of technology being a consideration instead of travertine tile or mahogany or whatever.
Right. Yep. And, you know, corporations want to make an impression when you walk in the lobby. And it used to be that it was through these finishes, and now it's going to be through screens that can change the entire mood of a building when you walk in.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark, great chatting with you. That was 35 minutes. It flew by.
It did for me as well. It was really fun to talk about.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.